Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Chris Gibson, you've always been a guy who likes to reach across the aisle and work with other people. You're working with Senator Gillibrand on Lyme disease. How important is this as a political and as a health problem?
Well, it's a public health scourge. It doesn't seem like a week goes by that I don't hear from constituents that are either personally suffering or have family members that are suffering, and we simply must do better. Country as great as ours, we don't even have a test that picks up half the cases of Lyme. I've helped sponsor legislation. We've gotten appropriations, an increase of close to $9 million for better testing. It's really important. What Senator Gillibrand and I are advancing is a bill that would form a committee of medical experts, researchers, and patient advocates that we think could make the difference. Actually, it's fashioned after a similar approach that we use to get it, to make a difference on the AIDS issue. And, having that patient voice in here is so critically important. The medical community is divided. There are those that don't acknowledge the existence of chronic Lyme, and yet we have constituents suffering from long-term consequences attendant to a tick bite. So I'm insisting that we do better. We have guidelines that come out of the CDC that are outdated. CDC's own policy is they have to be updated every 5 years. It's been 7 years, no update, and yet we're not reflecting the latest research. The latest research on co-infections that come from tick bites that I think could help bring the medical community back together.
What do you mean by co-infection
in
this case?
Well, I mean, part of the problem we're dealing with is a medical community that denies the existence of chronic Lyme. Well, in fact, there are other infections that come from a tick bite, like
same
babesia.
Tick. Sure.
This, I think, could help perhaps save face for some of the medical community. You say, well, see, we told you it wasn't Lyme. Well, to my point, I just want to get it solved. I want to see our constituents get better. And that's going to require our best effort. It certainly requires more resources. It requires a more unified medical community response. So I'm honored to work with Senator Gillibrand on this, as we do a number of issues. We work together on veterans, farming, nanotechnology, broadband expansion, and now Lyme disease. I think it's really important.
You have a potential opponent who has a lot of money, who's going to run against you. You have a court system which keeps basically saying, following the Supreme Court, that freedom of speech means you can spend what you want, basically. It seems to me that when a guy like you, you're not the richest man in the whole world. How do you?
That's a fact, and it's a matter of public record.
Don't you scream in your brain, it just isn't fair?
No, not that. But let me say this, and there'll be plenty enough time to get into all this next year. Yeah. But I do want to address two points. Mr. Eldridge, who is certainly seeking the Democratic nomination, we'll see in the end if he's the nominee. But, he's making this point. He says that he is a candidate not influenced by corporations and, doesn't take corporate money. That is an utter misrepresentation of the facts. You just take a look at who his donors are. He gets money from chief executive officers, CEOs, chief financial officers, CFOs, chief operating officers. His FEC report is replete with these top echelon corporate donors, number one. Number two, he takes leadership PAC money. You take a look at where leadership PACs get their money, it's corporations. And thirdly, his personal wealth, we expect that he'll spend millions, and it comes from his husband, that's corporate money from Facebook. So, the idea that he says he's not taking corporate money couldn't be further from reality. And let me say this. Let's just lay the facts out there. In a district that President Obama carried by over 6 points, how is it, other than money, that a young man with very little experience, with no ties to the district, would be appearing to be the candidate? I mean, what else would explain why somebody who has no roots to the district, very little experience, why would he even be a nominee in a district that President Obama carried by over 6 points if it were not for money? Money is the only explanation why this young man, 27 years old, has a real chance of being the nominee. I'm open to other ideas. I'm certainly willing to listen. But it seems to me that money is the only explanation. That's the first point. The second point is on independence. He makes this point he would be an independent voice. There's no evidence for that. No evidence whatsoever. What we know is that he has, up to date, been involved in the social milieu of the highest level of our country, on the political side, on the corporate side, that he is a jet setter. That's what we know. And look what he has said. He has criticized the only bipartisan budget out there. And look, I mean, this is a time as a country we need to come together. There's only one bipartisan budget to date that tries to bring people together to have a thoughtful approach to revenues, to spending. And he has nothing but disparaging comments to say about it. This reminds me of this article I saw last week in Roll Call, a magazine down in Washington, D.C. What Roll Call lays out is that National Journal does a study where they put on a spectrum of the 435 members, the most liberal Republican and the most conservative Democrat. In 1982, there were 344 members that fit in between the most liberal Republican and the most conservative Democrat. This year, there are 11. There are two Republicans and nine Democrats that fit between me, I guess, as the National Journal has described, the most liberal Republican, and Jim Matheson, a friend of mine, who's the most conservative Democrat. This is our problem, is there are not enough thoughtful people that are in the center that are ready to work together. The fact that he comes out against this bipartisan budget, the fact that his all his track record to date has been interacting with the highest level of partisan persons and also corporations, I mean, this just tells you he's going to be part of the problem. He's not going to be part of the solution. And, I think that those are two points I just want to make right now, because in my view, he's just misrepresenting himself.
And as to the concept that Americans should be allowed to spend whatever they want on an election, the courts have said that. Do you subscribe to that?
Well, actually, I don't. But it's going to be a larger lift. I'm actually working with a member of Congress right now, a Democrat, on trying to bring forward thoughtful public finance reform. There are two issues here. One is the way that we work districts. We need independent redistricting. You know, we actually had, I think it was Jimmy Vielkind that once said to me, he said, I notice you've never complained about the redistricting process. You went from a Republican district to a Democratic district. Well, it's because I believe that the way we did it in New York was right. It shouldn't be done by partisans. It should be done either by a judge or an independent commission. And, you know, we need this because part of the problem we're having is people come to Washington. They're either hard right or hard left. They know they're not going to face a competitive election in the fall, but they could face a competitive election in the spring as they're seen coming together. That's the first thing. The second is with regard to campaign finance. The issue is this. We need to have limits. Public financing is not the answer, because all you're going to end up doing is giving money to politicians, 95% of whom aren't even going to face a competitive
election.
Yeah,
but if the courts say no limits, then what are you going to have? How are you going to have limits?
I think you need a constitutional amendment that makes it clear that the American people expect that they're going to have a democracy that reflects the principle of one person, one vote. They call it free speech. Oh, it's not free speech. It's very expensive speech that we're talking about, and it distorts elections. And we need to cap that, and there are ways, I think, to do that going forward.
Chris Gibson, always fun to have you here. Congratulations on all your hard work, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you, Alan. God bless all the listeners out there.